from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. He doesn't want to be judged. He knows he will be judged. He's bragged it's been great. He's sniffed at the whole yardstick. And tomorrow, President Donald Trump actually hits his 100th day in office. So how's he done in that first 100 days? Where is he pointing his presidency and the country? This hour on Point, President Trump's first 100 days. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. How does President Trump, his style, his substance, his impact and effectiveness look to you at 100 days? Is this making America great again? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. 100 days, three views, plus you. Joining us now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Beverly Gage, presidential historian and professor of 20th century American history at Yale University. Beverly Gage, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you here today.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
With us from Arlington, Virginia, is Kelly Jane Torrance, deputy managing editor at the Weekly Standard. Kelly Jane, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. I'm happy to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Beverly, and Kelly Jane.
Beverly Gage, you're our historian. Tell us, what should we make of the whole 100-day measure in the first place? How significant is it? Does it matter?
It matters a little bit, I'd say. FDR was really the first person who introduced the idea of the 100-day marker, and he has always been the sort of figure to which all presidents have aspired, in the sense that he just accomplished an enormous amount in that 100 days. But in terms of what it's going to predict about what's ahead, it's not such a useful moment to stop and say, if he's done this in 100 days, then we know where we'll be in 3 or 4 years.
And yet, surely we learn something about a president in 100 days. I mean, the power of the office hits him and how he responds to it. It must be revealing when you look through the lens of history at what we've seen in these 100 days versus, you know, pick your 20th century marker. How do you begin to compare, Beverly?
That's right. I think we learn an awful lot about style and skill and priorities. I think with Trump, we're seeing some obvious manifestations of some of the weaknesses that we knew he had coming in, not just in terms of style and rhetoric, but in terms of the fact that he never had very deep ties with the Republican Party and has shown that he really doesn't have much control over his party. And of course, he is our first executive who had no experience in government or politics. And I think we're also seeing that play out as well in terms of his attempts to figure out what the levers of power are, what he's doing, how he's supposed to behave. And I'm not sure he's figured that out yet.
Here was candidate Trump. This was last October, introducing his contract with the American voter, outlining his 100-day plan as president.
I am asking the American people to dream big once again. What follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again. It's a contract between Donald J. Trump and the American voter, and it begins with bringing honesty, accountability, and change to Washington, D.C.
We can go down that list if you like and see what's happened in those 100 days and what hasn't. A lot of it, of course, has not yet. Very, very little, in fact, but it's big stuff. Kelly Jane Torrance, there you are at the Weekly Standard, conservative operation out of Washington. Last year, your colleague there, John McCormick, our friend here, had a piece on Donald Trump. This is when he was running for office. Headline, unfit to serve. Said he was manifestly unfit to be president. He's been president now for 100 days. How's he doing by your lights, Kelly?
It's an excellent question. And I should say that, of course, the Weekly Standard never endorses a candidate, and we did not. But most of our writers were not fans of Trump, as I'm sure you and most of your listeners
even
know.
Even though it's quite conservative, broadly speaking.
Well, we would argue that's not the case. I mean, you look at one of the main things that he ran on was
I mean, the Weekly Standard, not Mr. Trump. Oh. But I mean, the Weekly Standard comes from that perspective,
yes,
is all
course.
I'm saying. Yeah.
And exactly. And that's one of the things, is that Trump is not a typical politician, and he's certainly not a typical Republican. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've seen some mixed bag on what he's accomplished in the first 100 days. But talking about was he fit for the presidency, you know, I remember when he gave that first speech to Congress, the very State of the Union-like speech, people were amazed. Even, you know, commentators very hostile to Trump said, this man finally looks like a president. And he kind of shocked a lot of people by giving a prepared speech and doing it well. It's a pretty low bar to cross. But because of how he acted during the campaign, people were shocked. Now, since then, it's really gone back and forth, hasn't it? You know, he'll give a great speech like that. People will be impressed. And then he'll give a press conference, that famous one on a Friday, where it was hours and he took questions and he was all over the place. And, you know, he called out reporters. He, you know, didn't answer questions. He kept talking about himself and his great electoral victory. So I think he's kind of proven. One of the things I kept saying during the campaign is that we don't know what a President Trump would do. And I don't think Trump knows what a President Trump would do. And I think that's been proven right, given all of the flip-flops that he has made in his first 100 days.
But overall, at this point, from your perspective, do you give him a positive kind of rating for these first 100 days? Or are you in the unfit to serve mold of your colleague, Mr. McCormick?
Well, I think given what he looked like during the campaign, he's done better than expected. You know, we have not had World War III yet. And, you know, I'm being slightly facetious. I mean, a lot of us were worried that with a guy as unpredictable as him and someone who didn't really know very much about the issues and someone who seemed to be, you know, very much concerned about his ego, someone like that, you kind of worry that once they get the reins of power in the most powerful country in the world, disaster could follow. And you know what? America's still here. We're still alive. No nuclear war yet. So I think, you know, because the standard was so low, he has done better than expected. But on the whole, I would say, you know, no, his first 100 days have not been a success. He's had a few successes, but on the whole, he... Even, you know, even if you look at his supporters, I mean, here's a guy who has managed to please no one. You know, the repeal and replace Obamacare is a perfect example of that. You know, the American Health Care Act, they had to pull it. They could not put it before a vote in the House because they didn't have the votes. And it was both moderates like the Tuesday group and very hardline Republican conservatives like the Freedom Caucus who were against it. He seems to be able to have alienated everyone, including his own base, as we've seen with some of the things that have happened in foreign policy. And it's kind of amazing that, you know, he came in with people who were very strongly – he's a very polarizing figure. You know, people kind of either love him or hate him. And he's managed to start alienating even those people who loved him.
I mean, is that true among the public? I know his poll numbers are historically low for a new president, down in the 40-something favorability rating. But among the base voters for Donald Trump, I thought it was considerably higher, Kelly.
Well, it is. He hasn't totally lost them, but he is losing some of them, and he's particularly losing some of, you know, the bigger names, the, you know, bloggers, TV pundits. They are starting to worry a little bit. You know, the Syria move was a big example of that. Now, of course, candidate Trump said, you know, we don't want to get involved in the Middle East. We got to stay out of there, although that was contradicted slightly by his promise to kick ISIS in the blank. But, you know, when he, you know, did those airstrikes in Syria, despite the fact that they were targeted at an airbase from which the Assad regime launched chemical weapons against its own people, you know, in my view, that was, you know, a pretty low level military action. It wasn't, you know, it was actually, you know, pretty strategic, pretty targeted. But a lot of people in his base were very upset. They said, hey, we partly voted for you because you were supposed to be non-interventionist and you weren't going to get us involved in places in around the world, particularly the Middle East. And, you know, he changed his mind on that one. And it was kind of interesting to see. It was, you know, apparently it was the images he saw of women and children being gassed by Assad that just reached him in the heart, people said. Well, you know, now we know he has one. And, you know, changed his mind on the issue. And I find that one especially interesting since, you know, during the campaign, of course, he loved to talk about how great a leader Vladimir Putin was. Well, there's evidence that Russia was somehow involved in that chemical weapons attack on the Syrian people. Now, we don't know how much involvement they had. but they certainly knew about it ahead of time. And there's evidence that they might have helped Assad carry that out.
Kelly, hold that thought. Jack Beatty, jump in here before we get to our first break and begin to unfold how you're seeing Trump as we hit this 100-day mark.
Well, just one demur. You know, he does have the support of 96% of his voters in a poll released on Monday said they would vote for him again.
Yeah.
As opposed to 85% of Hillary's. So he's holding on tenaciously, it seems to me, to that base of voters. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe not getting opinion leaders, but he certainly has got that base. But I think Jeb Bush predicted it correctly. He said during the campaign, Donald Trump is the chaos candidate and he will be the chaos president. And I think he has been a chaos president, and partly for the reasons that our other two guests have pointed out, his lack of preparedness. He doesn't know where he stands on anything. This is a man who has changed parties, I think the figure is 6 or 7 times. He sort of creates himself anew every day. And sometimes someone has pointed to a tweet in the morning will be contradicted by a statement in the afternoon. So the effect is of chaos and of a man who doesn't really know what he thinks. On the other side, though, and I think a positive, the president does seem to be educable. That is, people are able to reach him with information that contradicts some of his core beliefs. And he adapts. And that, I think, gives us at least some ray of comfort.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about President Trump at the 100-day mark, what we have learned, what he may have learned, where this country is headed under President Trump. Beverly Gage is with us, historian from Yale University. Kelly Jane Torrance is with us from the Weekly Standard in Washington, joining us today from Arlington, Virginia. Jack Beatty is with us. You can join us as well. Okay, here we are. What do you make of this president? Is he a necessary jolt to the system? Is he a threat to the republic? Is he a loose cannon? Is he a breath of fresh air? Is he both? Is Donald Trump delivering? Are you glad or frustrated he's been stymied by the courts, by the Congress? In his inaugural address, President Trump said he would give power back to the people.
Today, we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people.
He has recently dismissed the 100-day mark, but at reaching 90 days, he was very happy to brag on what he was accomplishing. Here he was in Wisconsin, April 18th.
No administration has accomplished more in the first 90 days. That includes on military, on the border, on trade, on regulation, on law enforcement. We love our law enforcement. And on government reform.
A list there from the president. Saturday Night Live's list was a little shorter. This month, they poked fun at Trump's 100 days of accomplishments with this exchange between Alec Baldwin playing the president and Beck Bennett playing Vice President Pence.
Pence is hard to believe I've been president almost 100 days, and I've already done so much. It's hard to keep track of it all. Read to me again from the list of my accomplishments.
Of course, sir. Nominated Neil Gorsuch.
God, I love that list. What a beautiful long list.
God, I love that list. What a beautiful long list. Robert in Bethel, Vermont. Robert, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom and panel. Great day and always a great show, Tom.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm a total Trump supporter. My family was too or is and still is.
Yeah,
and,
okay.
Yep, you mentioned breath of fresh air, and that's the way, you know, we won't go down that path any further. But the biggest the disappointment I have is this god-awful, what I call the term paper, the healthcare term paper that the Congress, you know, had 8 years to put together and submit properly, test drive it, mm-hmm. and hand it to President Trump. And then Speaker Ryan tries to push it through. It was really, 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 really disappointing for me as a supporter that you know, Professor Trump, you know, flunked his class of the Congress with their health care term paper.
That he couldn't get the health care repeal or reform through. He couldn't put something together that would pass Congress.
Right. Well, it wasn't Trump putting it together. It was Congress that would, you know, it was the whole House, and, you know, putting it together, and they should have been doing this for the last 8 years and test driving it and handed it off to Trump and then announced it, not Speaker Ryan running back and forth and, you know, the freedom people and everybody's it was a disaster.
But when the president said on, he did say himself on the trail, you know, we'll have this big, beautiful reform. It'll be better than ever. Everybody will be better off. I mean, it appeared at that point, Robert, that he had his own plans as well. There's some responsibility right there, isn't there?
Well, I think there was definitely responsibility there, but I think the 90% of responsibility was on the congressmen and women that should have had this, all the ducks in a row, good or bad, and presented the term paper and should have received an A+. And even if Trump touched on it and changed a few things, but to deliver it in such a debauchery, if that was at Yale or Princeton or somebody, and some student waited till Sunday night to complete a term paper, and after...
Yeah, it wouldn't be good. You're a big Trump supporter, though. How do you feel at the end of 100 days? Do you feel like he will get his act together and deliver on what you wanted in supporting and voting for President Trump, or are you worried that it will be more disheveled and maybe unproductive than that?
I pray that he'll pull himself together. And I think one of my best suggestions for him is to get off of that god-awful Twitter account. It's not good. But I still trust, and I hope that the country, you know, really holds together. But the best part about this is, even in a positive, negative way, it's woken up the other side, you know, if you know who I mean, to really get out and look what's going on in the streets and what's going on the radios with, you know, all the flashbacks against Trump. And so I think the Republican Party really needs to get their act together for 2020, because it's going to be a disaster if Bernie Sanders' crowd starts really packing it up and going for it, because like you just talked about, the 96% of us are still holding on to Trump and supporting him, but then 85% of Hillary/Bernie Sanders are really, really getting their acts together to embarrass the Republicans in 2018.
Well, we'll see.
It could happen.
Well, we'll see, Robert. I really appreciate your call. Beverly Gage, can we just go to there's a Trump supporter worried about the tweet storm that the president specializes in. And I mean, you've looked over time. Presidents have adopted new technology, and they've reached out over time to communicate more and more intimately with Americans, and often been celebrated for that. FDR and his fireside chats when radio was fairly young. What about President Trump and his communication style? Ultimately, that becomes very important to a presidency. How do you see it, Beverly?
I think we are a long way from FDR's fireside chats, which he used very strategically in a very thought-through way, and was really quite eloquent in many of those chats. And he had a sense that part of what he was trying to do during the darkest days of the Depression was actually to try to bring the country together, to explain to people what was going on as these really, really big structural changes were happening in the economy and the government, to let them know that he was there for everyone. Right. So the style, the tone, all of it couldn't be more different than the sort of thing that Trump does, which is to use Twitter in a very sort of unstable way. And I think that that's one of the pieces about Trump that we've seen pretty clearly, right? If there's anything that's consistent about Trump, it is that he is all over the map. There appears to be very little filter in any of it. And so he is using Twitter. I suppose you could say it's strategic in a certain way, but he just seems to be all over the place with it. And he's using it to divide people and not to sort of rally the country together.
But are you so sure that this is not, I mean, Trump, the businessman, used all kinds of tactics to throw, people on the other side of the negotiating table off their guard, off their game, ultimately get his way. There is a stream of communication going on here. Can a president use that kind of, you know, come at it from this side, come at it from this side, throw them off balance, and then go for the gold? Is that an effective way to lead from the White House, Beverly? What does history say?
I think if you wanted to make the most generous interpretation, which is that this is actually a deliberate strategy, which is actually not an interpretation that I believe.
Okay.
I think it's sort of an unfiltered approach to communicating, but it has been very effective at keeping people destabilized. Right, the moment that your opposition begins to respond to one thing that you just said that they find totally outrageous, you move on to the next outrageous thing. and everybody is scrambling around you. And I think you can see that happening with the press. I think you can see that happening in the quote unquote resistance movement that is developing, which is a very interesting phenomenon. And I think in many ways is the most interesting thing happening. And you can see it in terms of sort of legislative and court reactions that he, if he has done nothing else, he really has kept people scrambling. And so maybe that is the strategy, or maybe it's just a sort of byproduct of how he's approaching.
Kelly Torrance at the Weekly Standard, how do you look at the way the president's communicating with the country? Communicating is a big part of leading.
You're right. It's funny, by the way, you know, talking what Beverly just said, I sort of joke that, you know, Donald Trump has a very hostile relationship with the media. And I sometimes think that, you know, his Twitter strategy is really just to make us stay up until 3 a.m. to see what he's going to tweet. And then we're too exhausted to do our jobs right. And report and edit the next day. But, you know, his Twitter account and Facebook, of course, are one of those are some of the reasons that he won the election is he had this direct connection with the American people. Now, normally, you know, the media does a fair amount to mediate between the public and the candidates, and the media often decides what they decide what they're going to report, what they're going to write about, and so in a way, they're setting the agenda a bit. Now, of course, they can only do so much. They've got to report what the candidates are saying, what they're talking about, what they've done. But Trump wanted to sort of get rid of that middleman, if you want, and go directly to the people. And, you know, it's had a – of course, it's been mixed. And I think it did a lot of good in that he was able to get his ideas such as they were out directly to the people. But we are seeing that now that he's president, he hasn't changed his strategy that much. And his strategy being, hey, whatever's on my mind is what I'm going to go and talk about. And, you know, there's messaging is important. And I think sometimes, you know, Trump and his supporters complain a lot about the media, and they say they're not covering him fairly. They're not talking about his accomplishments, the good thing he's done in his first 100 days. Well, Trump himself is his own worst enemy and makes that difficult. Instead of talking about some of the good things he's done with regulation, with energy, you know, he spent the first month, it seemed, talking about how great his victory was. He just couldn't let that go. And so instead of talking about regulatory changes that he did by executive order in his first week, the media was talking about how Trump was comparing his inauguration crowd to others and claiming it was better. I mean, he doesn't seem to know anything about messaging, which is odd for someone who, you know, really became a superstar because of reality television. He's not focused. He's not on message for himself. And I think that has done a lot to harm him in his first 100 days.
But he still seems to be on some kind of wavelength with that base, if the polls are right about that. Who knows? Steve in Franklin, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yes, Tom. I'd just like to say that, you know, I voted for Trump and I am a Trump supporter. And he has made some mistakes, of course, as any new president would.
Yep.
He's contradicted himself at times and he does brag and is a little boisterous. And I wish he would maybe back off from the Twitter account some. But I think he does that to keep people off balance. And he's not being predictable, which I like.
Why do you like that, Steve? Why do you want people off balance, and why do you want the unpredictability?
I like it because he's not traditional, and he's not going down one path. He's a person who's willing to listen to people around him. And when he does, he's willing to change his thinking. So all we hear at times from the media who are going crazy trying to analyze him is, well, he said this during the campaign, and now he's doing this. Well, he's doing this now because he's taken some advice, and he's going in a different direction. I like a person like that. He's a leader. Let's give him his 4 years and see what he can do.
Jack, there you go. There's the Trump base that wants to keep it kind of a little, or maybe more than a little edgy here, because they want change, and maybe it looks like that's the way to get it.
Yes, and change in the mode of communication. You know, presidents have had different strategies. There's a famous anecdote about President Eisenhower. He was changing a policy, and he was facing a press conference, and his press secretary said, "Mr. President, you can't go out there. They're going to just kill you because you've changed." He said, "Jim, don't worry about it. I'll confuse the boys." And he went out, and he just talked ragtime. You to look at the statement even today, you say, my God, what did all that mean? It was a deliberate effort to just completely put a kind of verbal snow over everything. And some of Trump's tweets, I think, have a similar, you know, effect. It just kind of throws everybody off and it confuses the issue. And even his most egregious tweet, the really infamous charge that President Obama was wiretapping Trump Tower, even that, in a strange way, has worked for him, because I see that a majority, it's a slender majority, of Republicans actually believe that. They are so anti-Obama, they're willing to believe that. And that counter story about Obama and about Susan Rice, which again seems to have no foundation that I can see, that nevertheless is taking hold. And we're going to hear more and more about that as the Russian inquiry continues.
Let's go to Debbie in Rice Lake, Wisconsin. Debbie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
What I'm concerned about here is that things are happening behind the scene with all this unpredictability and so-called, you know, this unpredictability, and we're not maybe watching the ball. Things are happening behind the scenes. Things like EPA laws are being taken away under siege. Regulations that are important to consumers are being scrapped as we talk. Our environment, our concern over our sale of our federal lands to maybe private sources, or maybe national parks being closed and used for industry. So these are things that, while all this camouflage is going on, things are happening behind the scenes that the American people are not privy to. They just aren't listening to the news, the undercurrent of news that's happening.
Yeah, Debbie, we've got it. Let me pick it up right there, if I may, Debbie. I appreciate your call. I mean, this is interesting, Beverly, because there has been a lot going on there. I mean, if you just look at a couple of things, and I'm looking here, Hugh Hewitt, the conservative commentator, say there's a sea change going on. And an enormous one, he says. You've got Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. That's going to have a very long-lasting impact. And then you've got regulatory rollback under the Congressional Review Act, and where you've just got lots of regulations who've not only been rolled back, but they can't be revived. He's saying these measures will reverberate for decades. They'll hamstring public funding of abortion at the state level. They'll narrow the reach of environmental regulators. They'll slap down U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on hunting. And all that. There is a sort of foundational change in regulation and the courts here that's a sea change already, Beverly. What do you think of that?
I think that's absolutely right. So the 100-day mark tends to be a mark where you measure how much legislation has been passed. And that's kind of because Franklin Roosevelt set that bar, and that's how people tend to think about this mark. And by that measure, Trump really hasn't done much. But that is actually not most of what government is. And in terms of his appointments, in terms of what's going to happen in the regulatory structure, in terms of agency policy, which is really where, you know, the vast majority of governing takes place, is not so much in Congress or even in the White House, but in the government bureaucracy. I think we're seeing really, really important long-term consequences already. So there are the appointments themselves, but there are also really dramatic responses within the government bureaucracy, right? Lots of people leaving government service, the demoralization of certain agencies, and all of that is going to have, I think, really critical long-term effects.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about President Donald Trump at the 100-day mark. 100 days this weekend, tomorrow. What we've learned, what he's learned, where this country is headed under the president. How do you see him? Are you comfortable with the team President Trump has surrounded himself with, all the family, his inner circle? What's the American face Donald Trump is showing the world? Are we headed toward walls and wars, or jobs at home and respect abroad? What are the values Donald Trump represents? What's he come to represent in office? And where is this country turning under Trump? Jack Beatty's here. Kelly Torrance from the Weekly Standard, Beverly Gage, Yale presidential historian. Simpsons had some fun, The Simpsons, with Donald Trump this week, a short clip they released online on the first 100 days, kind of scathing.
100 days in office, so many accomplishments, lowered my golf handicap, my Twitter following increased by 700, and finally, we can shoot hibernating bears. My boys will love that.
Sir, here's a new bill that you must read immediately. It lowers taxes for only Republicans.
Can't Fox News read it and I'll watch what they say?
No, you have to read it.
Okay, there's the Simpsons view here. But he has stood up, went after Syria after that chemical attack. Here he was on April 7th. He'd ordered a military strike on the airstrip there, called on other nations around the country to stand united against chemical weapons.
Tonight I call on all civilized nations to join us in seeking to end the slaughter and bloodshed in Syria, and also to end terrorism of all kinds and all types.
Not everything as simple as an airstrike on Syria. Here he was after things got really complicated on health care.
Now, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that health care could be so complicated.
Well, a lot of people knew, but the president learned it big time when he hit the White House. Harvey in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Harvey, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I did not vote for President Trump. And I'm a retired military member, and I think Donald Trump has did a great job of dividing the country and to continue to divide the country. I think he ran on a platform to create a lot of division in this United States of America, and mostly between race. And I think anyone that really would be honest would see the Trump supporters. I mean, they feel as though everybody is beneath them, everyone is less of them, and there is no trouble within their race. There's a lot of problems in the white race with drugs, with finances, and a lot of other things. But he's done a great, great job of dividing the country. And I think he's going to be a disaster for us going forward, especially with the military.
And Why especially with the military, Harvey? Why especially with the military? What do you mean by that?
I think because Donald Trump wants to take the attention off of him because he really, I don't think he even have an idea what he's doing. So what he do, I think he'll go out and create a conflict where the American people will be focused on and not focus on what he should be doing. I don't think he even ever realized that he's the president of the United States of America for all Americans. He brags about his supporters over and over and over, still going out doing these big rallies for his supporters. At some point, he's going to have to realize that he's the president for all Americans and try to bring us together instead of pushing us apart.
Harvey, I appreciate your call. Beverly Gage on the campaign trail. Donald Trump certainly attracted some supporters who were happy to run with a kind of white nationalist theme. Others who had nothing to do with that, but there was that dynamic loud and clear in his campaign, and Harvey worries about it long term from his time in office. What do you see on that front when it comes to unity across the diversity of this country?
I think that Harvey is absolutely right to be worried about that. So Trump has, I think, tapped into or made visible a kind of racial hostility that a lot of people thought was part of the American past, but not so much a part of the American present. But he's really brought it back into mainstream politics in a way that I think hadn't been legitimate or acceptable before this moment. And I think it's going to have terrible consequences. I think we are already seeing that. And even some of his language and some of his ideas cases that don't seem to be explicitly about race often have this kind of racialized aspect to it. So when he talks about bringing jobs back, you know, he's usually talking about certain kinds of industrial jobs that were often held by white men, as opposed to looking at the jobs that people are actually doing in this country, all sorts of people, women, people of color, and trying to make those jobs that exist here into good self-supporting jobs.
Jack, here I'm looking and thinking about the impact of this man. Harvey worries about the impact on the social fabric of the country over time. What about on the environmental front, Jackie? He has not pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement. We're told there's been a lot of debate in the White House about that. On the other hand, lots of regulation on the environment going away, and he's moved in very strongly to promote coal and to take take measures that sort of take the teeth out of the American commitment to reduction in CO2 that contributes to global warming. I mean, it may be that there's a legacy here already that will go far beyond the Trump years within just these 100 days as a result of that, Jack. Maybe that stands above anything else that he's done or will do.
Well, as you pointed out in a show earlier this week, Tom, over the weekend, Bill McKibben, the environmentalist writing in the New York Times, said that the changes in train, he wants to do CAFE standards, he wants to relax, and then perhaps the Paris, just the things that have been announced and the direction, that in a sense, the Trump administration may last forever. That is, the damage, the planetary damage could be not just because of him, but because of what it would license in other nations. That in a sense, this could go on forever because of the change it would make to the biosphere. I mean, this chimera of clean coal at a time when, you know, the economy is sending every signal that this is yesterday's and good riddance fuel. He still talks about that. And, you know, only belatedly, and we have to see whether it works out, but there were 25,000 miners who basically were losing their health benefits in retirement, and the government has only recently, as Mr. Trump said, oh, we're going to take care of them. It remains to be seen whether those real miners, as opposed to the notional miners of his rhetoric, are taken care of.
Marion in Southern Pines, North Carolina. Marion, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I just want to let you all know that last November, just before the election, my best friend since kindergarten said, what do you think it would be like if we woke up and Donald Trump was president? And my response was, I don't want to wake up. Well, of course, I did wake up. And a few weeks later, when I went in for my physical, for the first time ever, I had very high blood pressure. And my doctor said, in addition, I had lab work. And she said, you are now at a very high risk for a heart attack or a stroke.
Take it easy, Mary.
Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
And I just want to tell you, I want to give that man the Triple H Award. Hateful, hideous, and heinous. And yesterday when I saw Cohn and Mnuchin intoxicated with presenting the news that they were getting ready to propose the biggest increase in wealth for Trump and all the cabinet members ever, it was...
You mean the tax outline that they offered?
Outline. It's all about... I mean, didn't you see how they were laughing? And they're so happy and they're high because this is what they all want. And as far as, thank you for mentioning one of my heroes, Bill McKibben. And as far as Scott Pruitt, I think he should be launched somewhere on the outer continental shelf, never to be seen again. And the good news in North Carolina is Trump's rating has fallen from 49% to 41%. So a little good news. We've got a great governor here now, a great attorney general, secretary of state, and we also managed to elect a judge on the North Carolina Supreme Court. When I say we, of course, I mean the Democrats.
I guess we can hear that in your high blood pressure, Marion. Stay zen there. Kelly Torrance, what about on the tax front? Man, this is a very broad plan outlined here, but Donald Trump was keen to get it in under the 100-day wire to show where he's headed there. And our caller is quite right. There was an exuberant sort of presentation of this yesterday and very warm response from lots of Republicans, but I don't know about all. How do you see you're representing a conservative publication there? Does this look like a strong push to you or like the giveaway to the rich that Marion fears?
Yeah, it was exuberant, wasn't it? It was very different from Paul Ryan's PowerPoint presentation on the American Health Care Act when that came out. Now, tax reform, it looks on the whole pretty good. I mean, we don't know all of the details yet, but, you know, yes, it will lower taxes. It will lower corporate taxes. But this is not something that is just, you know, this doesn't mean that executives are going to take home all this extra money. I mean, the United States has one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world, 35%. Canada has a much lower corporate tax rate. You know, the cliche, of course, that Canada is a socialist paradise. Well, you know, we've seen in the last few years companies actually fleeing the United States and heading to Canada because they have a more business-friendly tax regime. And it is something that is going to affect regular people because when companies leave, when they don't hire as much, there are fewer jobs, things cost more. And so, you know, I don't think this tax plan is just aimed at the wealthy. And again, we don't know all the details, but that, you know, some things he said are pretty great, like reducing the number of brackets from 7 to 3. And they claim they're going to simplify tax forms. That would be great. You know, 90% of Americans say they need help to do their taxes. I mean, you shouldn't have to get someone to help or even pay someone to help you pay your taxes. It's kind of ridiculous. And he has promised that middle class will see a tax cut. So again, we don't have all the details, but it does look pretty good. And I will say, I mean, this last week has been pretty crazy, hasn't it? We've got the tax reform. They're trying to bring repealing Obamacare back, and they're trying, you know, averting a government shutdown. And it's almost as if Donald Trump suddenly remembered, oh, I had this contract with the American voter. I said I was going to do all these things in 100 days. It's almost as if he just remembered that a week ago. And I think that is a worry, though, that he and the Republicans are rushing a little bit to get too much done just so they can say, hey, we got this done in 100 days. And I hope that people are actually, you know, working on this hard, taking this stuff seriously and not just trying to get out as much as possible just for, you know, press effect.
Jack, how do you see the president's performance when it comes to his kind of populist promises or populist appeal to be there for the little guy in this country who globalization and some trade trends and more may have worked over in the last couple of decades? Is he delivering on that?
I don't think so. I mean, sort of locally, you know, I'm going to get some jobs here, some jobs there. But in the main, no. And I think Ed Luce of the Financial Times was one of our really acutest columnists, British writer on America. He said he predicts that Trumpism, essentially this bundle of chaos, this pop, whatever comes out here, that it will perpetuate the conditions that gave rise to it. It will this tax plan or sketch will perpetuate and indeed deepen inequality. The health bill that he was enthusiastic about, as everyone pointed out, it would have hurt his own voters most of all. People living in rural areas where there was no competition for insurance companies and where they'd have to pay huge premium increases. And you know, again and again, he seems to forget the people in the big things, the people that brought him there, and is making these sort of bargains with Wall Street. And by the way, on Wall Street, I read in the Times that even the hedge fund, you know, loophole, and they can pay carried interest loophole allows them to pay at a lower their taxes at a lower rate. Even that apparently is not it's okay with him now. That loophole, not only has that loophole not being mentioned, it looks like carried interest people are even going to get a bigger tax cut. That's a betrayal of his of the people out in the heartland who voted for him.
Beverly Gage, you're a presidential historian. The most sharp critics of Donald Trump have expressed concern that he would erode the foundations of the republic itself, that he would be a threat to democracy itself. Now, in these first 100 days, we've seen the courts who have come in and stymied him on a number of fronts. We've seen Congress he's had to work with, and it's been nothing like just authoritarian rule there, that's for sure. Do you see that threat to some fundament of the American system in this president playing out, or do those fears seem overblown to you at this point? Only 100 days in, but still here we are.
I've been pretty heartened by the degree to which the political institutions of the country have served to kind of constrain some of the more outrageous things that Trump has tried to do, right? So we've seen the courts, we've seen Congress play that role as well. And to some degree, we've seen the agencies themselves resisting things. So when Trump comes in and wants agencies to do something and it's not their practice or they don't think that it's legal, right? We've seen that there. I think the most interesting thing that's going on, though, is that Trump has created this whole new sense of civic engagement that I think in many ways is really unprecedented in American history. So it started out the day after his inauguration with the huge Women's March. And that, the idea that the day after the inauguration, the resistance is on, opposition is there, people are taking to the streets. That's very, very unusual. And then what's been going on in town halls, the fact that people are kind of running all of these electoral programs, thinking seriously about what these two parties are going to look like in the future. I think all of that, if Trump has done nothing else, he has set lots of things in motion. And I think we don't know where all that motion is going to end up. But,
our time is short, but could he end up looking like the Give 'Em Hell Harry Truman, you know, or the Andrew Jackson down the road? Or do you think he's outside that kind of mold from American history?
I think the most important things that are going to come out of Trump are probably opposition and resistance to Trump within his own party and in the rest of the country as well.
What an observation at 100 days. I'm sure that's not what he has in mind, and many of his supporters are hoping for something else. That is clear. That 100 days, that's what we're hearing from the historian, Beverly Gage, professor of 20th century American history at Yale. Thank you very much for being with us today, Professor Gage.
Thanks, Tom.
Kelly Jane Torrance, deputy managing editor at the Weekly Standard. Thank you for joining us today, Kelly.
Thanks, Tom. Loved hearing from the callers.
And Jack Beatty, here we are, 100 days and on we go. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.